Joining us now in studio is the city administrator of Northfield, Ben Martin. Ben, good morning. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Good morning, Jeff.
City Council had a meeting last night, or I should say a work session, not a regular meeting, but you got some things to talk about. I want to start off with an emergency declaration. You had an emergency Monday evening, Monday overnight at the wastewater treatment plant. Tell us what happened there.
That's right, Jeff. So we had been doing some maintenance work and had done a pipe plug as part of that work that was done. It was probably over like 12-inch thick pipe kind of at the end of our...
I'm going to have you bring that microphone
at the end of the wastewater process. Pretty large pipe. We had a pipe plug failure that evening, so the alarms were, you know, went off. Our staff responded to that. So we ended up in the basement of our wastewater plant having about 5 feet of partially treated wastewater that we had to have pumped out. During that pumping process, we had about 375 gallons of water that was discharged basically as part of that. So it went overland onto our property. It was contained on our site, so there wasn't any public health risk. We ended up getting the water out of the system. Our plant was up and running by 7 a.m. yesterday morning, so we were up and good there. And then the day was kind of spent evaluating kind of our systems. We were having kind of an analysis done, and we've been having some irregularities within our system for some of the electrical components. So in the basement there, it's kind of concrete. It's, you know, it's a structure that's set for wastewater treatment, but we do have some electrical impact with that. So we have a number of systems that are going to need some significant work and new equipment pieces as part of that. And so as part of the process, we brought to the city council an action to declare an emergency, basically, to allow us to forego some of the procedures that we have to go through on our bidding to get the equipment quickly. We have a piece of equipment. They're a little unique, so they take some time to come to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So typically state statutes on larger expenditures require kind of a public notice and a period where you have to do some advertisements. So by the council declaring an emergency, and in this case it's an emergency because if we ultimately had full failure out of our plant with some of these irregularities, if the system started to fail, could end up resulting in discharge of some of our wastewater into our waterway. So that's a public health risk. So because there's potentially imminent risk, if we aren't able to expedite and get things stabilized, there is some threat there. So we're going to certainly try and... get pricing where we can to be competitive and work on that. But at the same time, we ultimately need to get this work done swiftly and respond to that. So that's the action that the council took that really grants that authority. So the emergency term does not pose any threat to the public. You know, it's a relatively minor discharge that we have, so we did our notice to the MPCA, so there's no problem. Our wastewater customers don't need to change what they're doing, really won't see anything from their side of things, but this does allow staff to really deal with this problem.
Mm-hmm.
We could be looking at upwards, you know, around the $200,000 cost of this, so it's a major issue that we're looking at on repair. So we have insurance adjusters coming down today, so we're fully insured through the League of Minnesota Cities. So it should be applying to our deductible and things with that.
Now, this happened Monday night, kind of late at night, around, 10 o'clock, somewhere around in there.
Yep.
Tuesday morning, yesterday morning, I did not notice any interruption in my water service. How is that affected? Are there redundancies? And I know you're not an engineer who works at the plant, but
right.
Maybe, are there redundancies built in? The impact that this has over on the overall thing, what was the job of the broken parts? And in the meantime, will we be able to function fully?
I think to get into the real technical details, we probably need our utility people here to give a full explanation of that. But it was a pipe in the one of the final components of the process to move the wastewater into another system for kind mm-hmm. of the final polishing treatment before it's discharged out. So it was relatively clean. Now, as the question relates to the capacity of the plant and how to, during that time where we're dealing with that, what happens? Part of it's we have the discharge of water that's going on to get that out. The other piece is the plant does have some capacity to not be discharging during a certain period of time. So with what they had going on and with what they were able to do to stabilize things, it was a short enough period of time where they mm-hmm. were able to get it under control. If we ultimately had a larger failure, you could have a situation where ultimately, rather than the plant completely getting inundated, you do a release to allow more of the water to go out. But there is capacity built in for storage to allow periods of time where we're not discharging during that process.
Now, did you have a time expectancy on when this was going to be back online? Do we know that yet? It just happened 36 hours ago, so...
Yeah, so we are fully functioning right now. Mm-hmm. As of yesterday morning at 7 a.m., we're fully operational again. So we're, as far as how long it will take to do the repairs, some of the work will probably start happening very quickly. Some of the other components that we have, they call them transducers, we have about 10 of those pressure systems. I believe those are going to be probably weeks on order.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the plant's functioning, we're just seeing some irregularities in the system. So there's probably some extra monitoring and things that our staff will be doing. So again, it is kind of an ongoing review that we had yesterday. We were kind of making sense of things and then trying to determine actions. So we'll be kind of continuing that conversation with our staff today.
All right. Once again, City Administrator Ben Martig is with us. Let's move on. You've got a presentation concerning livable communities for residents age 50 plus. Tell us about the presentation. What is Northfield shaping up to look like in that survey?
So we're part of, we are now officially designated under the American Association of Retired Persons, AARP, I guess now,
mm-hmm.
For a designation as an age-friendly community. And basically, we're part of a global network of communities that they have kind of a program where they examine the physical, social, and economic frameworks and then have communities take action to promote independence and a high quality of life for people as they age. So they look at these different domains of livability within a community. So one of the first phases that the AARP has within their program that some of our steering committee led and that was presented last evening relates to just kind of analyzing what's going on. So there's a kind of a standard format survey to be able to have benchmarking across these across communities that are part of this program. So Northfield, we had a presentation last evening. We had fortunate to have the Carleton students help with a statistical analysis of that. So they came and presented. Dr. Katie St. Clair, and Carleton professor on mathematics and statistics, along with three of her students came in and spoke. We also had a couple of representatives on the age-friendly steering committee, advisory committee. So Patty Cernia was in, as well as Shelley Holden was at the table, and there's a number of others at the podium. But some pretty interesting results back, I guess. Some of the things probably not surprising with the results and some information new. But the areas we scored the best categories were health and wellness, health and wellness to our community or the residents. Transportation and streets and housing were kind of the highest areas that were important. So some of the examples of those features would be well-maintained hospital facilities, well-maintained streets, and affordable and trustworthy contractors are some examples within that category of the things that they said are really important to them as it relates to being an age-friendly community. Some of the findings that they had that took it where there's the largest need. So they identified what was most important, and then what are the needs where there's maybe a gap. So there were three primary gap areas where, Northfield's a wonderful community, but areas to maybe focus on for improvements. One was job opportunities, a little bit unique because most of the survey people were 70 plus, but healthy community goes more broadly. And so they did talk a little bit, well, what does that mean with this group with not a lot of people working and that kind of a thing? So they talked a little bit about that. Community information was a big one. There's a hunger for community information and how do we get that so people get their information from different sources. And then the last piece is housing. One area in particular in the housing that was interesting was being able to find where do they find contractors to be able to do home repairs and also services like lawn services, shoveling, mowing, those kinds of things. They're really specific to those types of senior needs, so maybe modifications to a bathroom or might be more moderate, more minor type of repair issues too. So that was one of the interesting pieces that they gleaned out of that. But I think they said they got, I think the report's like 50, 60 pages or something, and it is now on their website. So we do have the detailed report as well. But just a really large source of information. And what they do next is they're going to be further analyzing this, and it's going to be working towards an action plan. So there's going to be some processes along the way. Certainly probably be some city-related issues that we probably will be participating with them on as well as partner organizations in the community.
And we're going to have somebody in from the committee that put that together in the next week or so. I don't have my calendar with me right now, but we will have somebody come on to talk about that in a little more in-depth. So let's move on to the next consideration that was on the agenda last night. You had cable access, PEG fees, franchise fees. You're looking to raise the PEG fee. Is that what the proposal was?
That's right. So currently cable access or cable subscribers in the community that receive services, the city does charge basically a tax or a fee as it relates to that to be in our public right-of-ways. So the wires that run through town and those kinds of things, there's a 5% general revenue fee that's on that. And then there's an additional what's called a PEG fee, which is basically goes to equipment needs and upgrades that are necessary to provide a community access channel to the community. Mm-hmm. So we have equipment that's pretty outdated as it relates to loading those videos and things onto our system and a need for some upgrades. And a lot of our costs are kind of fixed into operations right now. So this will generate about an additional $10,000 per year. So people are paying 75 cents right now a month related to this PEG fee to help provide that cable programming to people. It'll be an additional quarter, 25 cents. So it'll get up to a dollar a month on that they would be paying if the council would ultimately pass that. So again, one of the benefits, too, with modern technology is when we're preparing videos and things to get loaded onto our cable access system, you now can pretty seamlessly put it also onto, you know, websites and those kinds of things to make broadly available. NTV is who we currently contract with to provide some of those services. They've got an updated website, a lot of videos there that's available, as well as having the programming on our two channels that we have. So the council will be taking that up into consideration. Also, we have the contract that we have with Charter Communications. It's an open system, so other providers could come in the way that it works with our agreement. But it's coming to an end after 15 years, so the council is going to be considering an extension to that contract to give us more time to negotiate a new agreement with them into the future.
All right. Once again, City Administrator Ben Martig is with us. We have talked over the course of the last couple of months about the new development out by the hospital. And there was an item on the agenda last night reviewing a draft development with the developer, Chester Yannick and Associates. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is the council did approve basically moving forward with the lease amendment that they approved at a previous meeting. So one of the provisions within that is to give direction through a development agreement as it relates to some of the site issues on the development of the property. It's a little unique process because typically if you're going through a normal development, private development process, a lot of this is handled at the staff level following regulations of, you know, what's the design of the building, what's the site requirements with parking, landscaping, and all those kinds of things. It's a little bit different in this case because the council had an ownership interest in the site and, you know, along partnering with the hospital, have some controls of that property and want to ensure in particular that the development meets a certain kind of standards in our guidelines. So staff's been kind of trying to understand that. So a lot of the development agreement we presented last night talked about referencing future approvals of staff. We are recommending some things that are a little unique for senior housing projects in this zoning district to require building standards, like for the aesthetic of the building and the materials, to be more consistent with like a commercial district. Because there aren't really any standards for that particular type of use within the district that they're building in. We also talked a lot about infrastructure, what we're going to do now that there's another private user out there. How do we share some of the sewer lines and water lines? So the city will be requiring that the hospital and the developer have shared maintenance agreements. So if there are failures or maintenance work, it spells out who does what and at what cost sharing. So that's pretty standard when you would have this type of a development in another commercial area of town. You might have these types of easement requirements. So we're explaining to the council what we're looking at including in a draft development agreement, and that will be coming back next week for review of the city council. We did talk a lot about infrastructure out there as well. What's the current capacity of our road systems? What's the water system capacity and sewer, and how is this project impacting that? as well as down the road, if development occurs out in the future, then how might some of those costs be absorbed into the future? So there was some good discussion on that. Ultimately, with this project, there's quite a bit of excess capacity. So it's kind of filling that with past investments that have been made.
Were there any concerns raised by the council?
There were a couple of things that were inquired about that they had asked staff to take a look at. One was there was some discussion about the operator providing medical assistance priority for a certain number of the rooms. So inquired whether or not that could be incorporated as part of the agreement. So there was some debate of the city council members about that provision. There was some questions about traffic access onto Highway 19 off of Eves Avenue, about concerns of safety on particularly left turns off of Eve across 19. And with some added traffic, does that exacerbate some of the concerns with that? And should we add anything in there on safety provisions, or what might we be looking at in the future to deal with those issues? So those were a couple of things we heard as feedback. Might have been some other minor items we're taking a look at as well. So we'll be looking at how we incorporate those, or at least have them as alternatives for the council as an update.
All right. When will the development agreement be final? Is that coming up at your next meeting? Are they going to approve that?
Originally, on our schedule, back when we started this process, we had intended action next week, but we had intended the development agreement actually be in final draft form by this evening. It's taken a little bit more time on our review, so we're looking at the first meeting in February. We've got a little bit of a break here, so we're looking at the 13th of February. So I think what we'll be doing is getting council discussion next week, probably be working with the hospital as well as the developer to review those draft agreements in preparation of bringing to the council for final consideration at the first meeting in February.
All right. Is that still along with the timeline that has been set up earlier? Will the developer have an opportunity to get this going this year?
It's a little extra time. We're certainly sensitive to their schedule. The sooner the better from their standpoint. But I'm confident that this still allows them to move forward with their project.
All right. Once again, City Administrator Ben Martig is with us. You also, the final item on the agenda was to discuss establishment of a Northwest Area Land Use Consultant and a committee, a process advisory committee. How did that go?
Good. We only had about 8 minutes left in our meeting, I think, by the time we hit that one. And I don't think it was a surprise to the council. It was actually in our action plan from our strategic plan. One of the components of our economic development goals was looking at some new growth opportunities. And, you know, even the senior project's a good example. A couple of council members said, you know, we'd rather be proactive on planning our community's future and, you know, in what do we want and where. And it's been a while since we've looked up in that Northwest area as a community. So taking a look at having designees from some of our advisory boards that directly relate to planning in that area. So our planning commission, obviously, would be a key one. Some city council representatives, our economic development authority, housing and redevelopment authority, partly because on the east side of the hospital, you know, there's some housing growth areas that might be applicable. In our hospital board, obviously the hospital is a key user out there, and then probably some immediate property owners that are adjacent to some of the existing developments. So St. Olaf owns a lot of land, so we're looking at them particularly participating in that. Ultimately, the mayor be coming forward with some appointment considerations at the next council meeting. Really no concerns with that. This group would really only be tasked with process. So how do we create a process to review? Probably looking at a third-party facilitator to help with that, be sensitive to cost as well as building off of what's already been looked at in the past as a community, but how do we re-engage with that review? This group will look at a process to bring back to the council for recommendation.
And that third party would be the consultant mentioned in the description here?
I don't think we have a specific consultant in mind yet. We talk about, you know, how do we find the right person to help lead us through that discussion and ultimately come to a shared vision on what to do out on the northwest area of the community.
All right. Once again, City Administrator Ben Martig is with us. Ben, anything else going on in the city or anything from last night's meeting that you'd like to mention?
Kind of heading up next week, we had a Human Rights Commission report last evening, an annual report. So Justin London, our vice chair, and Marv Altacantos, our current chair for this year, came and gave an annual report, a look back to last year. They've been very active, municipal ID, public education, a number of issues. But next week, one of the things they were wanted to get out to the community was we have the Martin Luther King community celebration next Monday evening at 7 p.m. at Emmaus Church, and the community's invited to that. I attended last year, and it was a really positive event. I think it was maybe an hour and a half, maybe at the most. They'll be giving out an award for the Human Rights Award for the annual award for that at that evening and announcing that, and they've got some interesting speakers. So Really excited for that opportunity. So come out, bring your families to that event.
All right. Ben, thank you so much for coming in.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Northfield City Administrator Ben Martig. You're listening to 95.1 FM, AM 1080, KYMN, Northfield. Coming up in a moment, we've got Terry with local news. Here's the latest from around the state.